You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
On May 10th, New Zealand's Employment Court reached a landmark decision against the Gloryvale religious community, classifying the work that members do there as employment. This comes after years of allegations against the group exposed Kiwis to a world of physical abuse and workers' violations, with children as young as six being made to work long hours at Gloryvale's many businesses. I spoke with Dr. Bill Hodge, an employment law expert, about the decision and what it could mean for the future of the secretive community.
Do you think that the decision that the Employment Tribunal came to was the right one?
It's not the Employment Tribunal, it's the Employment Court, which is interesting because they started at the upper level instead of having someone from Department of Labor or someone from the Inspectorate of Labor bring it into the lower forum, which is called the authority. So they would have taken an action under Section 6, which means the court looks at the real nature of the relationship between the party that possibly is the employer and the parties or party that is doing the work and may be an employee. And to me, based on the facts, it was really quite straightforward, and I don't want to use the word routine, but when you look at the facts of the amount of labor, the scheduling, the timetabling, the direction, the fact that many of the activities were directed toward a profit-making activity instead of just doing some chores around the house. If you get your grandson to mow the lawn, that's probably not a profit-making activity and probably not going to be employment. But when it's regularized and made scheduled and it's directed in a rather vigorous way, as they heard on evidence, it begins to look like employment and not simply children or teenagers doing some work around the place or people involved in a church doing it because of a calling. Those were really the only two alternatives, family relationship or religious activity. There's cases on both of those. But to me, the evidence was so powerful. The only question was, why hadn't the labor inspectors seen it for what it was when they made a visit? That's the only question.
Yeah, well, I mean, the evidence was so clear for so many years, and there's been all these allegations of worker abuse coming out of there as well. Why do you think it took so long for this decision to be made?
Well, you can't blame the court. I mean, the court can only hear the cases that are brought to them, and I think the judge, with all due respect, has done a brilliant job, although on the other hand, I think it was pretty routine, because I don't think there's a serious question of law. It was simply a routine application of facts. Now, your more difficult question was, why hasn't this happened before? And I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the labor inspectors, and they may have been, what's the right word, overwhelmed a bit by the religious ambience or the religious emanation of a place which is sort of exclusive. And they might have said, everybody here is motivated by a religious fervor, and it's not a commercial activity. But when you dig down a little deeper, there was commercial activity. There was services and goods being sold, and they were turning a profit thanks to this labor. But why the inspectorate didn't see that before, I'm guessing that, well, there is a case involving a Methodist minister in which it was held he didn't have an employment agreement, he had a calling. He had a calling to do the work of what he perceived to be his God, and it was not an intention to fulfill contractual obligations. They might have been influenced by that case. I don't know, because I haven't spoken with them. They might have been a bit, well, I guess traditionally in New Zealand, the law has been a bit has backed away a bit from religious functions and paying too close or seeking too close an adherence to law, for example, in paying taxes. That would be even bigger. And whether the IRD will look at many of these things, I don't know. But I think, I guess, in New Zealand, there's been a tradition of backing away from undue enforcement of commercial statutes against organizations that appear to be purely religious.
What actions do you think will open up, especially from, like, legal actions will open up against the community, especially from former members and possibly Oranga Tamariki as well?
It certainly looks like the MB, which is the Labor Inspectorate, I honestly don't know what has gone down in terms of income tax, commercial tax being paid by bodies corporate. They might have had an exemption. I honestly don't know about that, but I think I could say pretty clearly that there will be several government departments saying, as you say, the way children are treated, the way wages are not paid, the way holidays act, and so on. There's a whole raft of employment statutes that will need to be pursued, and it may well be that, we'll put it this way, this decision was something in the nature of a test case, and now real plaintiffs with real claims for back pay and so on can come forward in the authority saying, here's the legal precedent. We were employees at this time. We weren't given statutory holidays. We weren't given annual holidays. We weren't paid the minimum wage. So I think there could be a queue of cases, whether they would be heard together or not, but I think there'd be a queue of cases coming from different directions, prosecutions, back pay, unjustifiable dismissal. There's a whole host of things that could come forward, but I don't want to be too dispositive about the IRD because I honestly don't know whether they have been paying taxes on commercial activities or not.
And how do you think the culture of Glory Vale will change after this decision?
Good question. That really is, you should be asking them. It looks like a Christian-type discipline became a profit-making. Well, I'm not on the inside. I'm really speculating. I would hope that they would begin to apply New Testament principles of love rather than capitalism and make as much money as they possibly can on exploited labor. But it does look like labor was exploited, and they should be taking a very hard look at how they're using the young people, maybe the other people as well. But I think they should be taking this as a wake-up call because I think the glare of the legal system in many different dimensions, both employment and tax and otherwise, will be focusing on them. So if for no other reason, they're going to have a legal microscope being placed over many of their activities that they sort of got away with for a long time.
The allegations against Glory Vale have also reignited demands for the community to lose its tax-exempt status. I talked to Professor of Law Michael Littlewood about the possibility of this. However, I started by asking him why they are tax-exempt in the first place.
It is generally the case that charities get preferential tax treatment. And the reason for that is the basic idea is that a charity is something that is good for society and that providing preferential tax treatment will enable charities to do more good for society than they otherwise would. So that there have always been challenges around the borders of what satisfies the definition of a charity. And there's all sorts of long history, very long history, in fact, of marginal cases that some people think are good for society and other people do not. So it's obviously Glory Vale is currently a fairly controversial case about whether they're doing any good for society at all. But if they are within the definition of a charity, then they are entitled to these tax advantages, the same as any other charity. I mean, it's quite easy. You can think of other charities that are clearly beneficial to society, right? And so the idea is that those kind of activities should be encouraged, both in their own endeavours and also to encourage people to donate money to them.
Obviously, there was the recent employment court ruling where they found that work that's done at Glory Vale is actually classed as employment, not volunteer work. And it was basically found that a lot of workers there were being abused, not paid, and kids as young as six were being beaten for not working. Do you think that this could affect their tax-exempt status? And why not?
Technically, that's quite a different question because the question of whether an organisation gets the tax preferences that accompany being a charity depends upon whether its work is within the definition of a charity and doesn't depend on whether it is breaking the law in other respects, such as not paying people whatever the law requires employees to be paid, or inflicting violence on children or whatever. Obviously, if a charity behaves in that manner, it might be objectionable on all sorts of grounds. But in order to qualify for the preferences, tax preferences for charities, what you have to do is come within the definition of a charity, which basically revolves around the idea of doing good works along the lines of, for example, providing relief against poverty or supporting educational causes or those sorts of things. So theoretically, I suppose you could be, an organisation could be pursuing charitable purposes, such as providing relief against poverty or supporting education, even if it was treating its own employees badly. I mean, you would hope that an organisation that has got a charitable object would comply with the law in all respects and, in fact, would be a model employer. But just because it breaks the law does not necessarily disqualify it from being a charity.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.